Welcome to another episode of Working with Purpose, a show dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We're glad you joined us today, and we're in a new series, topics called Questions in Business and Leadership. This series will continue on our path to advance a new image of leadership based on the metaphor of the human body instead of a rigid machine. I want you to know you can join this conversation online anytime at davidstarkcollective.com or find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. You can also listen to all of our podcasts and leave us a review on iTunes. Well, Justin, I want to get into our question today by telling you a story about probably my first entry into business long ago. And I actually managed a greenhouse nursery, and because I had a landscaping and a love flowers background. And so after the nursery, I started my own landscape business. And one of my first contracts was in Seattle, and Seattle has a place called Waterfall Gardens. And Waterfall Gardens is actually where United Parcel Service started. So they bought the land, they put in this waterfall, beautiful bonsai trees all the way around it. And in Seattle, you can go there year-round. And part of how they attract people year-round is they have 14 36-inch planters, and they're granite around the outside, and then I plant them. And I had the option of bidding on this contract to basically 8 times a year change the flowers based upon temperature and light, etc., so it would have color all year round. And I got this contract. I was very excited about it. And the way I got it is I thought of a strategy, and the strategy would be, let's make epoxy liners, 3 sets of them. So when we come down here, we just pull out the ones that are in it, place the new ones already planted in there, take it away, and then you've got, basically compost all of that and use it again, et cetera. So they loved that, and I began doing that. And so as part of that, of course, I said, well, here's the price for the epoxy liners. I got somebody who's going to do those for me. And they said, great. So I went over there, and they gave me the architectural diagrams. And the architectural diagrams, said these are 36-inch planters. And so I had them made 36 inches. They're all ready to go. I'm very excited about it. I go down to Waterfall Gardens, and it turns out that the containers are not to spec. In fact, they made them 35 inches rather than 36 inches. Now I've basically got 14 times three epoxy liners that don't fit. So I had to swallow all that cost and then make a whole new set at 35 inches. And it really taught me a very clear lesson, and that is strategy and execution can be really torn apart from each other. So we're going to deal with the question today. Is it really your strategy driving your strategy, or something else driving your strategy? That's what we're going to try to tackle today.
Right. It's going to be a good topic. We got a lot of good things to talk about for this one for sure. I've got a little story for you, Dave.
Please.
On the same kind of topic. So get your warm milk ready.
I'm ready.
Here it goes. So I have a similar story in a different dimension of like who's driving your strategy. And in a prior life, I ran a product design team for a consumer electronics company.
Yes.
So we were building essentially video games and video game accessories and other consumer electronics, and our customers were the biggest retailers in the nation.
Yes.
So the Best Buys and Targets of the world, et cetera. So I had a team of, call it 15 or so strong, and there were various roles. We had product managers and brand managers and design directors, et cetera, that we were all tasked to come up with great innovation and then be able to sell that innovation into, again, the bigger retailers in the nation.
Sure.
Well, reality really ended up being that those big retailers that we worked with, they basically told us exactly what they wanted, and then we went and we found that, we slapped a brand on it, and then we sold it to them at the price that they wanted to pay.
No control here, right?
There was very little control in that, and that it kind of goes to, I mean, in hindsight, it's 2020, our desire to have, control over the strategy and to bring our own innovation to market, I think, was great, but it wasn't necessarily aligned with our capabilities internally.
Yes.
Because our genesis actually as a team was that of a private label product builder. So said another way, we were used to and we would accommodate retailers saying, hey, we'd like to build this portable DVD player and we need it for, you know, for Black Friday and we need 20,000 of them. Yes. And so we would source it and we put a their brand on it and we get it to retail. That was kind of the model that we grew up in. And so to make this shift toward a different way of, you know, envisioning innovation and bringing it to market wasn't something that aligned with our capabilities well.
Yes.
And so we'll, and that's kind of a spoiler alert a little bit for what we'll talk about later as well and how this alignment of strategy and execution and your own capabilities is something you have to take seriously.
Yes.
But again, it's one of those cautionary tales of, you know, just, you know your roots and know who you are and what strategy ultimately is driving your direction.
You bet. And we both know about a book that Paul Leinwand and Caesar, I think it's Manic.
Caesar
wrote this, and it's really an illustration around this question because they've done, you know, thousands of surveys about where people are in terms of strategy and also in terms of executing the strategy, in other words, letting the strategy drive the strategy. And it came up with these results. 2/3 of companies said their capabilities do not support their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
They went on to say that 9 out of 10 companies were missing opportunities that their strategy said they should be winning. And then again, 80% said their strategy is not well understood inside their company. I get that a lot with people. You know, beyond the CEO, it's like nobody knows what we're doing here.
Right.
And only 8% said they believed that they were good both at strategy and execution. So there's a big gap here between strategy and execution and how we get that done.
I mean, we just stink as a nation in terms of aligning strategy with capability. You'd think that would be fundamental to
it does.
Us business people, but evidently we're really terrible at it.
I know. I can't tell you how many companies where I go in and say, okay, well, I'm just going to review your old strategy. What strategy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a football. We've got to start at the beginning.
right. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, a quick reminder to everyone that might have just joined us. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David and Justin. Visit us anytime and join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective, and gosh darn it, write us a review on iTunes if you would.
Please.
But again, only if it's a good review.
Right.
if it's not, just, you know, keep it to yourself.
Be still.
Yeah. So, Dave, we've been talking about strategy and aligning strategy with capabilities.
Yes.
And, you know, I want to put in a biblical parallel here that that I find interesting and appropriate at this point, which is Matthew 7:13, mm-hmm. which those of you out there that know your Bible well will know that this is the, you know, the road to lead to that leads to destruction is very wide,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I'm going to say the same thing with strategy. The road to strategy is narrow, or to good strategy is narrow. There are a lot of ways to veer off course here, mm-hmm. and we're going to be unpacking this a little bit. But man, this is as true for business as it is in life in general. And, you know, I think so the ways that you can go wrong are many, but some of them are this, right? The demands for your time as a leader or just anyone working in an organization, the demands for your time are going to come from everywhere.
Yes.
And ultimately, it's up to you to prioritize where you give attention and where you don't. And those decisions are really, really important and add up over time to the outcomes that you see as a business.
That's exactly right. Because only one person can do the things you need to do.
That's right. And, you know, and if you're not making the main thing, all of a sudden now, you know, your effort and your energy and your passion is going to be diluted in ways that just isn't going to be effective. And so, again, there are a lot of ways to do that. There's also, you know, business is filled with fads and buzzwords. And, you know, we like to mess around with them and play with them. And we talk about a lot of them on the show.
Yes.
But there's one that in particular that I think Gartner has publicized this or popularized this, but it's called the hype cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's primarily around technology, but it just kind of showcases, like, at what point do the expectations for something really rise high beyond even their capability to deliver value. And so as an example, like the Internet of Things, mm-hmm. and the connected home,
right.
and, you know, technologies like this that have been hyped so much, mm-hmm. but, you know, as consumers now, we're like, well, that sounds nice, but, you know, reality isn't such that it's helping me yet.
Right.
You know, there are all these companies trying to do connected home things, but none of them connect and the experience is bad. And so this hype cycle would say, well, this is at the very top of the, you know, expectation curve, and then now it's about to dip down into what they call the trough of disillusionment.
And then, that sounds like
right. And so then you rebound and eventually get on this plateau of productivity, they call, where you actually see some value and things get figured out. But
yes,
all of that to say that, you know, you can chase these shiny objects as a leader really easily. And it's important to know what's a shiny object and what is really just an important piece for you to move your organization forward, because they're not usually the same thing.
Absolutely.
Right.
So let's dive a little deeper, because the authors in all of their research found five important ways of going about building your company and building your strategy and execution that really stand the test of time. And the first one, so I'll go through these, but the first one is choose a core identity. I'll say more about that in a minute. Link cross-functional capabilities behind your core. So coming out of the core identity are maybe 3 to 6 capabilities, and you need to align those cross-functionally along the way. Thirdly, reorganize your organization to best utilize the existing culture rather than fighting against it. You can be choosy about 1 or 2 pieces, but we'll say more about that a little bit later. Cut costs in non-core areas, but invest in core areas, right? And then shape future by reimagining your core capabilities instead of trying to reinvent the entire thing. So that's a summary. We'll go over each one of these in a few minutes here. But let's just start with choosing a core identity, right? Choosing a core identity is to make a commitment to, rather than focus on growth anywhere you can find it. In other words, you've got to say, this is where we're going to lay our hat. Okay, our identity is going to be here, rather than just reacting to, that's a possibility, there's a possibility, there's a possibility. In other words, as you get some momentum in the marketplace, you've got to choose to commit to part of it. That's what great companies do. They know the paradox, right, that focus actually means scale in this. And I, you know, I've talked to both profits and nonprofits about this whole thing. And I over and over again have to convince them to not to try to enter into businesses that are beyond those 3 to 6 capabilities. And sometimes I remember one guy I was talking to who thought was invincible. He was refurnished office spaces, and he was really great at it, right? But he was just he felt invincible. So one day I came in and he bought a D9 tractor because he thought he was going to go into road construction. I mean, that's how out of touch you can kind of get here. I said, that's nowhere near your core capability, for example. So, I mean, the really funny things happen along the way. I also worked with a nonprofit who wanted to buy in all of these other companies that really had nothing to do with what they were competent at, and they usually just dive when you do that.
So you're saying I should return my tractor.
There you go. Take that back.
Okay.
Resell it.
Okay.
Anyway, I think we need to take a break for a moment here. All right, folks, we'll be back in a minute, and we're going to actually look at all the other ways that you can align strategy and execution. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Be right back.
Spiritual principles have become common in the workplace, whether or not managers and leaders acknowledge the source. It's a great time to be a Christian in business, and that's why Working with Purpose is bringing you this conversation. Working with Purpose is a program dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business, and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We'd love to have you part of the discussion. You can dialogue with David and Justin on these important topics, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events, and more through their website, davidstarkcollective.com, or find them on Twitter, @StarkCollective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to Working with Purpose, and will help you and your business go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. Find out more now by going to davidstarkcollective.com. and open either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. Now let's get back to part 2 of Working with Purpose.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Please visit us anytime and join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at StarkCollective.com or just at StarkCollective, not the .com.
Right.
Either way. You know what I mean. And join the podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Give us a great review. All right, Dave. So we've been unpacking strategy and capabilities and execution, how they all come together.
Yes.
And you went into the first topic, which was to choose a core identity.
Yes.
And I'm gonna riff on this a little bit here.
Please.
And I'm calling this sticking to your knitting.
Mm-hmm.
Sticking to your knitting. And this is the thing that I think most businesses get wrong right off the bat, because the allure of that next sale and the next piece of business is so strong. And, you know, it's almost commonsensical to say that, well, if I just do more things, I'll get more business, right? If I take on these additional capabilities, or I stretch into this client that's asking me to do something I don't typically do, I'm going to get some new business. And at times you're actually rewarded for that thinking, you know,
yes,
because you will get another client, potentially. You'll get that at least initial new job or whatever that is. And, you know, in the short term, you can actually grow doing that. But the secret sauce here, and the thing that actually is, you know, non-common sense, is that, you know, by, again, sticking to your knitting and finding your core identity, you know, when you're able to focus, you can actually grow faster. And this is where scale and growth happens. And there are a lot of examples out there for that. But I'm going to name drop another great author that I love. And this is, you know, he has his a specialty in the professional services arena. But his name is Tim Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote this book called Positioning for Professionals.
Uh-huh.
Right. So it's basically for, you know, folks that are, you know, whether they're tax accountants or lawyers or ad agencies or whatever they, you know, because, you know, everyone has this problem, the allure of trying to chase new business outside of your capabilities. But he had a couple of things that really resonated with me there. And we'll put this in our show notes so you can get at the book if you want to. But he said the best growth strategy is ultimately to decide what not to do.
Yeah, that's a harder question.
It is, right? And it's tough to say no, because you think as a leader, you're supposed to say yes, and that's the way that you grow. But it's actually not. And he goes on to say that, you know, there's a lot of proof points out there that the specialist always earns more than the generalist. And you can look at that from different agency types or et cetera. But I will also say a nice thing that comes with specializing is actually get clients and customers that you want.
Right.
Instead of just taking everything. Because, again, they align with your capabilities as well as your passions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that's so important. So if you're out there and you're struggling with how you grow from your core, and also you see that your employees are maybe not satisfied because the kind of work that's coming in isn't what they want, It's from the same kind of issue that we have here. You're not sticking to your knitting.
Right. Great stuff. And let's go on to the second one they talk that kind of connects to this one. It's pursue functional excellence. And what that really means is that any good focused company only has 3 to 6 distinctive capabilities. And they're working from those 3 to 6 cross-functionally. So everybody knows those are the things that we really want to do well along the way, rather than the belief that you know, I just offer more products and services, which is what you were talking about a minute ago. I think it's really interesting to say why, because let's just take Malcolm, the Tipping Point. He says it takes 10,000 hours for an individual to get good at something, but on a company level, to really have distinctive capabilities, it's called the experience curve. And that means you have to do something as groups together, processes, people, until you really get something that's distinctive. It
right.
takes a lot of work to get distinctive. That's where that narrow is the way really comes true. And if you don't do that, then you're going to be pretty good at a lot of things, which does not get you sales. And long term, you're going to be you're basically trying to operate in 4 or 5 competitive markets simultaneously, which you're going to talk about more in a minute. But yep. rather than really getting focused.
Yeah, I mean, you're waging a multi-fronted war, which is tough whether you're the military or you're running a business. And the net effect of that is, honestly, you erode your margins, because competition is coming from everywhere. And so ultimately you're competing then on price instead of by capability and uniqueness.
Yes.
So if you're not differentiating, you're competing on price. And that's a tough game to win.
It is.
So a quick note to those of you that might have joined us again. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David and Justin. Join us anytime at davidstarkcollective.com, on Twitter @StarkCollective. Or listen to our podcast anytime on iTunes. All right, Dave, so we've talked about one and two. Let's talk about number three.
Let's go to number three, and it connects right out of this, and that is to reorganize your organization around culture. I've seen a lot. I have a culture tool, so I've worked with a lot of companies about reorganizing around culture, but I've seen more than one of them try to make a radical change. You know, and so they're really changing their market discipline, like from product leadership to operational excellence, right? Or from service leadership to product leadership, these big jumps that are hard to do inside of culture. And the problem is that it pushes so against the culture that the culture is pushes back many times or can't handle that kind of transition easily. And I've seen some work, but they take a lot of time and they require a lot of change, usually of people that are working for you, right? A better way to approach culture is to say, okay, these are distinctive capabilities. Here's the culture that we've got. And we may change one or two aspects of that culture, but primarily we ask the question, how can these distinctive capabilities work with our culture to be able to win in the marketplace? Why don't you say a little bit more about that too, Justin?
Yeah, I think the culture piece is so important. And I think as a leader, it's also one of those things that's very ambiguous and amorphous. It's like, well, of course, culture is important, but how do you actually, you know, what are the levers that you can use to actually change culture?
Yes.
And, you know, you and I work with organizations and in advisory roles, and we work with this all the time. But there are some fun tools out there, and we'll put that in our show notes as well, but one that we like is actually from a group called Strategizer.
Yep.
They have a really great tool called the Culture Map, and it's simplistic in nature, but it allows you to get your thoughts on paper and start with the behaviors that you observe in your organization, and then you draw lines to what the outcomes are, positive and negative, that you see that are happening. So this is now giving you an understanding of, again, what behaviors and what outcomes. And then the final thing you look at is what are the enablers or blockers that are leading to those behaviors? Because then you can start to get to the sauce, if you will, that is the policies you have in place and the, you know, the activities and the rules that are in there that are actually driving these behaviors and leading to these outcomes.
Yes.
So it's a fun, it's a simple tool. But again, as a leader, it'll give you a constructive way to kind of approach that. And again, it's a fun little trick. So we'll put that in our show notes.
That's great. That's perfect. And so let's jump into number four here. And that is, be careful where you cut costs. A lot of people see it as, well, we'll just cut costs and drive revenue, and that's how we're going to grow. The problem is, if you cut costs across the board, you're cutting costs in your distinctive capabilities, which means you're not really continuing to grow. In fact, wisdom says you invest in those core capabilities and you cut costs other places, right? Because if you don't discern like that, then first of all, you're investing in stuff or still have money in stuff that you shouldn't be investing in anymore, and you're not investing in those distinctive capabilities, which is going to drive you forward long term.
And it's important to know where you're actually getting value and where you're not when you're cutting costs. Like,
yes,
if you make a unilateral decision to cut your marketing budget in half, and one of your sales channels, you know, gets 75% of its revenue because of some of those activities, well, you've now just shot yourself in the foot.
Yes.
So again, going back to that point.
That's exactly right. And so let's go to the final one, which is shape your future by reimagining the capabilities, not reinventing them. So when you've had distinctive capabilities and you keep investing in them, yet the marketplace is changing, what you need to do is to reimagine, how can our distinctive capabilities now compete in the marketplace? What are we going to have to do to adjust them, or even have secondary capabilities from other firms that allow us to continue to win in those situations, rather than trying to, well, we're just going to throw out those capabilities and try to build new ones? You're way behind the eight ball if you're doing that. Usually you're a larger organization where you can't really do that because you can't afford it. And the time, the experience curve time it takes to get those up to speed. So again, you're staying with the core identity, but you're reimagining those for the future along the way. And I want to say what's underlying all of this, Justin, because when you think about all these different things we've been saying about committing to identity and you know, picking those distinctive capabilities and building them and et cetera along the way, they all are supported by the fact that you're not working as a machine inside the company. Why? Well, because you can always buy a completely different machine, right? And that can be completely different things that it spits out along the way. If you have that image in your mind, we'll just buy this and buy this and buy this. No, it's a living system, like the human body is. And consequently, All living systems have a DNA behind them. They have a unique way that they've been wired and put together. And on top of that, of course, living systems, at least the human living system, can learn. And it has muscle memory, for example. It has ways that they've done things over and over again so that they build up based upon the gifts and talents that they've been given. And by using those gifts and talents and maximizing those and minimizing the places where you have non-talent, that's how a human really addresses things. And so rather than trying to be all things to all people or just following what the whims are out there, basically when you have a living system, your history and how you're wired is going to determine where you can be in the marketplace. The more you can line up with that uniqueness, that's the part of body you're meant to be. So if I'm meant to be a right arm, I'm a right arm rather than being a leg or whatever else I might want to try to be. All right. We appreciate you doing this. I just want to say thank you for joining us today on Working with Purpose. I'm David Stark along with Justin Royer. Next week, we'll be dealing with the question of how to make smart decisions in an interconnected age. Help us keep this conversation going by connecting online at davidstarkcollective.com. If you'd like to explore further about how to develop a strategy and how to execute it, just email me at david@davidstarkcollective.com. That's david@davidstarkcollective.com. Thank you for listening.